Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Susan Minot's new novel, Don't Be a Stranger, is the luminous story about erotic obsession, the hunger for intimacy, communication, and oblivion. It is the story of a woman swept into a love affair at midlife. Ivy Cooper is 52 years old when Ansel Fleming first walks into her life. 20 years her junior, a musician, newly released from prison on a minor drug charge, Ansel's good looks and quiet intensity instantly seduces her. And over the heady weeks and months that follow, Ivy finds her life bifurcated by his presence. Susan Minot is an award-winning novelist, short story writer, poet, and screenwriter. Her first novel was Monkeys. Her novel Evening was a worldwide bestseller and became a major motion picture. Don't Be a Stranger is her first novel in a decade, and it's a delight to welcome Susan Minot to this week's book show. Thank you so much for being with us. What a delight to have you here.
Thank you so much, Joe. Happy to be here.
At what point, as I mentioned, 10 years, which would indicate that you haven't put out a book in 10 years, which isn't the case, but for the novel to take 10 years, what was it about this particular project that needed that time?
Well, you know, you never know till after. I thought when I was starting out, I was going to write a little slim novella about an obsessive love affair. And, you know, not that there are a lot of stories of obsessive love affairs, but I wanted to make sure I did a version that I hadn't seen before. So that always takes longer to figure out how something is going to be fresh. And then I realized that, oh, this maybe wanted to be explored a little more in that. And it wasn't going to end when the love affair part was over, that for the character Ivy, who's a woman in her early 50s with an 8-year-old son, to sort of move into a different part of her life took a lot of different roads. And so I ended up exploring those as well.
I'm fascinated by the ending with the relationship having a conclusion, then that there was still more that you wanted to say. And as it appears in the novel, you had a lot more that you wanted to say.
Well, you know, think of all the so many books about love affairs, say that love affair that ends. The heroine will decide this is it, that's the end, and she'll throw the keys into the river, or, you know, take a left down the road where she used to take a right, or she'll meet the man at the coffee shop that will be, and you'll think, okay, she's moving on. And I thought, you know, the moving on after something very absorbing and, in this case, almost addictive, it's not a quick thing. And I thought, you know, that's just as interesting a thing to explore, how people move on from things. And it's often, again, in dramas or in movies or in books, you take up swimming and then we learn, that's what she's found to substitute for this. But substitutions are, it's too pat an answer. And I think a person in real life finds a lot of different things that help her to sort of crawl up out of the crater she's in. So that ended up being just as, I don't know, what the book was aiming to get to, as well as exploring the reasons why she allows herself this surrender to an unavailable man.
I want to talk to that unavailability in just a moment, speak to that. But in writing about love and sex and relationships, as you say, you really wanted that mothering urge to be a part of this book, something that does not go away just when you happen to be obsessed with someone.
Right. I mean, it goes both ways. It's like you can be obsessed with someone, but you still are a mother. Or, you know, again, I would say mostly in books, if there is a mother character, she doesn't have time for something else going on. And I thought, I don't know, a person still has those aspects of herself that get shut down or put aside or whatever in order to give her attention to mothering. But in this, I wanted to tell a story of someone who, given this, that, she's single, she needs like maybe some extra intimacy for herself to feel like she's still an adult and a little relief from the tedium and the pressures of motherhood. And so that part of her, that erotic part of her life is still going. I mean, it can only last so far. I think that that's safe to say, but she doesn't stay away from it because she knows it can only go so far. She's going to explore it for as long as it will last.
And that was fascinating because it seems like she keeps testing herself. This is going to be the line in the sand, and then we'll move the line just a little bit down the
Yeah, I
road.
think. I mean, isn't that the struggle we have with ourselves all the time? You
In
know,
every aspect of our lives, yes.
yeah, you're sort of trying to be better this way, but maybe not that. Or what am I? Who am I really? And what is my inclination that I sort of owe to myself to follow? But what is the one that's maybe going to be bad for me? But I sort of found in writing the book that I think the common wisdom is, oh, not good. If a man doesn't love you the same way you love him, it's not good. Well, it may not be equal. And it may not go on forever, but some things that aren't quite right can be very illuminating, can be very expansive to experience, I think.
What I found so fascinating about the character of Ansel, and this is the younger lover that Ivy has and comes into the picture. But what's so fascinating is that there never seems that this is a character who there never seems to be a moment where he is not saying exactly how he feels. It's certainly not what Ivy wants to hear usually, but he's not being dishonest, which quite frankly is also comes off as pretty rough, and I'm sure I'm not the only reader who winced a lot.
Well, I think Ivy actually finds it partly challenging, maybe, but also it's pretty, to me, seductive when someone is straightforward. Most people don't have the sort of bravery to be so straightforward about themselves. And so I think she, in a weird way, trusts him. Because she believes what he's saying. I'm not available. This is probably going to be not good for you. And he's not saying it in a manipulative way. He's being pretty sincere. And that's unusual also. And again, I do look to try to write about characters that I have not read about. So this is an unusual character. He doesn't slot into the way you're supposed to behave. But good on him in a way, I think.
How much of that in the setting up of the character was he's a musician, he's an artist, and oh, by the way, he also served several years in jail.
That's a very important, not very explored part of him, but we don't explore much about his story. We only see him through Ivy's eyes and what she learns about him. And there's no question that he's been in jail for 7 years. And that is, you know, that's traumatic. That's a traumatic thing to do to, and I will say across the board to anyone, you know, that's my feeling about the incarceration system. It just seems insane
Right.
to put people literally behind bars because they've done something they shouldn't have done. And so I think he's definitely suffering from that. So that's part of the dynamic that Ivy gives him sort of an extra pass because He's not in a normal position of most people that she knows, right?
Susan Minot is our guest on this week's book show. The name of the new novel is Don't Be a Stranger. It is published by Knopf. Bring me to the discussion you had with yourself, perhaps, that was whether you were ever going to explore that. Was that ever something that you wanted to explore and say, oh, it would be interesting to flesh this out a little bit more? Or were you always under the impression that you didn't really need to?
This is one of the reasons why it took 10 years to write, Joe, because yes, indeed, I did flesh it out. And yes, indeed, there was a lot more because I thought, okay, let me explore two different people's relationships and, for each from each other's point of view and how this person sees that. And so I did do that, and I pulled back on it because I thought it made the book stronger just to stick with Ivy and her experience. And, you can always start off down these different tributaries and start to write about the incarceration system or go off and more into her marriage that she's gotten out of recently. And but what was it like, and why did it break down? And I kept on. With the help of my editor, she'd say, maybe you're getting off the subject here. Like, let's go back. And so there's a lot of writing you write out to see if it's going to be pertinent, if it's going to shore up the book rather than spread it out. So I took a lot of it out. Yeah, that wasn't going to be the focus.
When you're writing about, and there's not a lot there, but when you're writing about the ex-husband, that there are moments where he too is very straightforward. It'll be said, well, that's he said it in this very matter-of-fact way. So there's almost a similarity there between those two male characters.
Ivy definitely likes that person who just says things straightforwardly.
The idea for you in exploring the motherhood aspect of it, of having this child who is at a, I mean, I guess we could say this about most ages, but at a very impressionable age, and a child who has just gone through a divorce, is having a tough time and trying to do the best thing, and just how difficult that is, and where her allegiances lie.
Yeah, I think part of her, in the wake of this divorce, she moves her son away from his father geographically.
Right.
So not only is there more pressure on her to look after everything, she also has removed her son from his father. And she knows that's not a good thing, but she's not going to live down the road in a farm place. She's going to try to rebuild her life in New York City, where she's got some friends and a network. And so that, both the guilt in the wake of divorce, I think, is if you have children, it's really something to wrestle with, because people do choose to get divorced, even with this sort of painful, and what the parents can see is going to be very distressing for their children. So I think her frustration with that and her guilt about that helps us believe that she would sort of throw herself into the arms of this man to just get some relief, right? She's
Right.
definitely in a position to want to kind of soothe herself some way, escape some way.
She has a confidence. I assume a confidence she would not have had when she was younger, but she has a confidence of where she is in that moment.
She does. I think she has a confidence because she's 53. Okay.
Yep.
She's about some things, she's still as adolescent as a 18-year-old in some ways, but in other ways, she knows herself enough to know that, you know, I'm going to be a better mother if I do see other adults and don't just play with my child on the rug all the time, right? So she's trying to keep some balance, to keep herself really overall strong enough for her son. So ironically, it becomes a way that she moves away from him at certain points.
There is a point in the novel where Angela is saying, "Come with me," and she's saying, "Well, no, I have to go back. My son is with a sitter, and I want to get back." And he's like, "Well, the person's there. Everything's fine." And it's really there again. A line is being put in the sand, and that line isn't moving. That line is very firm. But what I thought was interesting is that she's proud of herself that she stuck with that, right?
Right. And it sort of seems to be the only time he is coming kind of toward her, and he sort of asks her, and she thinks, well, he'll ask me again, or we'll come to that point again. And that's it. She stuck with what she needed to stick with, basically. Yeah.
Yeah. How much did you play with how big of a jerk you wanted this guy to be?
Yeah, I had to be, you know, he can't be so elusive and dismissive so that you think, okay, this Ivy is just totally crazy. Like, what is she even?
Right.
But I did want to, again, along the lines of a character or a relationship that you don't always see because people say, oh, well, that's not good for you. You don't do that. I wanted to describe why one does sometimes do something that on paper doesn't look like it's so smart or, you know, nutritious for you or whatever. So I had to, I mean, I do think that Ansel's straightforwardness is a real positive and admirable quality. And he also, though he doesn't say this, and it's not gotten into a lot, but we know the fact that he was in jail for 7 years. So who knows why he's behaving in a certain way, you know? I think that's part of his behavior has to do with that.
And sometimes there's one part where one of the characters says, "Well, it was just drugs." But to what extent and what got him there and what happened in prison, we don't know that. We also don't really know his level of fame. He's a musician, but what his status is. At one point, he's playing in a club, but that could be someone who is either on the rise or is even achieved great success. We don't even know that, which I thought was really cool.
Good, good. Glad. But I mean, the less you can say, the more the focus is on kind of what's going on between them, right?
Because you have it where she basically just Googles him, looks it up, and has that information that is not shared with us, the reader.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's not part of their discourse, right? It's not part of their relationship. They really have this very unusual kind of bubble separated from where they just meet in, you know, two different rooms in the city of New York. And otherwise, that's about it.
Susan Minot is our guest. The name of the new book is Don't Be a Stranger, and it is published by Knopf. There are friends of Ivy's in the book who are, it seems like at the very beginning of the relationship, "Oh, good for you, get what you want. That's fantastic, great." And then later on, as the journey unfolds, they're saying, "Well, you don't need this. Come on. What are you doing? What?" And that's fascinating too, because those are voices in the choir that are being added to the overall thoughts in Ivy's head.
Right. Well, they're, you know, they're the stand-ins for the healthy people who have figured out a better way behave or what a healthy relationship is, or it's not about withstanding pain in order to learn something. That's not a prescription that we're usually given, because you're supposed to, if something's painful, you should run from it. And Ivy is ends up being, for whatever reason, it's like pain isn't something she runs from. Pain is something she's kind of examining. Like, wait, is this good pain? Is this just pain of what love is like? Or because the pain, for instance, of loving a child is, there's a little sliver in your heart if you have a child that's in pain, because you're worried and it's not just, this happy love feeling, right? So
Right.
that's always there. And I think particularly Americans have this fear of pain, as if it's, just must be gotten rid of, instead of paid attention to, perhaps, and see what it's indicating or what it's maybe even teaching us. I think I was watching a interview with Joni Mitchell recently, and she said, pain is a really good teacher. And then she said, perhaps the best teacher of all.
At the end of the affair, what could possibly happen next is the exciting part, but also the idea for Ivy of how what we have read about in this relationship, of what it has added to her knowledge and her thoughts. And I guess I'm asking this in the sense of I was taken by the texts that she was writing Ansel, and how painstaking some of those were, and whether to write and whether not to write. So then when that concludes, then what you're left with, okay, this now is where I am, and I have to now figure that out.
Right. Don't have that as a focus to, in a way, even though it was sort of leading her to herself, this affair, it was also taking her away from herself, right?
Right.
Which is, again, the balance of any relationship. This was just a more, extreme version. And that's one of the reasons for the title. It has to do with the relationship. Is someone a stranger? Do you know them? But it also has to do, obviously, with herself. Like, is she a stranger to herself? Like, how much are you when you do your duty, which is against kind of your instinct, but you're doing the right thing? But are you following what you really want to do? And all those questions just keep on percolating. And I have to say that people usually think, oh, by the time you're 53, like Ivy is, you figured those things out. Those are adolescent questions. Those are in your younger years. Then you figure out who you are, and then, you're solidly set. Well, I don't think that that's necessarily so. I think it keeps on going. It may be more quiet the older you are, but it keeps going if you're alive.
Right. And it goes back to what we were talking about before, that there was a confidence there, and that confidence strengthens, but it does change.
Right. Yeah.
The other thing I thought that was marvelous in the way you tell the story is that you don't spend a lot of time on the moments when Ansel isn't in the picture, in the sense of you will simply say it's been 3 months, or it's been 3 weeks, or 4 days, but you're not letting us know what Ivy is necessarily doing during that time, because pretty much we assume she's just moved on and is still interested, but is just waiting for the next interaction.
Just trying to carry on. Again, Joe, the 10 years of I didn't need to write all that of what was going on while she was away. It turns out I could just leave that out. Yeah. Yeah.
That seems hard to me, in the sense of having that insight and that brilliance to say, this is much better if I leave it out than it is if I tell you more.
That's called writing.
Yes.
People think writing is, oh, everything that you write down. It's got a lot to do with what you leave out. Like, how little can you give someone, right? That's, to me, part of the challenge, because you don't need to overload people. You can talk about things forever.
But you need to overload in the sense of you need to go through the exercise
I
to
do.
know what it is that is necessary to leave
I
out.
need to check it all out to see if it's worth keeping in there. Yeah. Because I'm creating a world, right? It's going to be a little of that. Should that be part of it? No, maybe this. Oh, turns out this is going to be more than I thought. Or, you know, it's all up figuring out the balance of something.
Do you have interest in how people at the end of the novel feel about Ivy?
I do. I think you feel, you know, she's definitely, and again, this isn't focused on too much, but if you read carefully, you pick up. She's let down a few of her friends in this being obsessed in this way. But also as a mother, her friendships have sort of suffered because she can't quite keep up. And so there's some, I won't say fallout because no one lets her go. People still stick with her, but she's frayed a little bit of those friendships. And I think she is appreciative of her friends that they have stood by her. And I think she's aware of having tried the patience of some of her friends.
Right. Susan Minot's new novel is Don't Be a Stranger. It is published by Knopf. Susan, what a delight to speak with you. Thank you so much for taking the time and thanks for sharing the beautiful novel with us.
You're very, very welcome. Thank you for your questions. I really appreciate it.
Again, Susan Minot's new novel is Don't Be a Stranger, published by Knopf. Thanks to our producer, Sarah LaDuke. Write to us at book@wamc.org. The latest on national productions programs is available via the Airwaves newsletter at wamc.org and on social media at WAMC Radio. Bookmark us for next week, and thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.